Item number five, that's the state forest metrics. We're just a few minutes behind schedule, not bad. So I think we were either having Ryan Wilson or Ryan Gordon, excuse me, or I'm not sure what is it, or Liz Dent, who is leading this one off, excuse me.
It's okay. That would be me, Chair Kelly.
All right, Liz, thank you.
Yeah, and colleagues.
All right.
Okay, so I'll just get going here. For the record, my name is Liz Dent, and I serve as the State Forest Division Chief. Joining me today on this agenda item is Tyson Weprick, our monitoring coordinator and specialist, as well as support from Todd Heron as a subject matter expert. And Todd is our acting resource support unit manager. His day job is forest resource analyst, so great resource for us. So realize I skipped formality there. Good morning, still morning. Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, and incoming State Forester Mukumoto, welcome, and we're excited to work with you in the coming years. So during this agenda item, this is an opportunity for us to provide the board with some information around what's happening on state forests and some conditions, forest conditions, what we know about roads and some other factors. A key message I want to provide for you all as we get started is that we're really using our best available information right now. This information does not represent statistically based study designs. We accessed some good information, but just did want to put that qualifier out there. The metrics that we picked were part of a list of performance measures that were adopted by the board in 2007. So I just do want to provide a little bit of context for that, sort of the where have we been with performance measures, where are we now? That's the information we're giving you today, and where are we going? So I'll start with where we've been. After the board adopted those performance measures, we began reporting in 2008 and continued through 2013 with every other year reporting. We paused that reporting for a few reasons. One is during the Great Recession, the State Forest Division reduced our staffing by 30%, and that really rippled through several portions of our program and clearly affected our employees. But big impacts to our monitoring resources, our ability to invest in inventory, young stand management, investments in recreation, and just, you know, generally investing into the forest. We're really in a keep things going mode. At the same time, workload was really increasing. We had been working on the new forest management plan with the Board of Forestry at that time and kind of anticipating we were going to be wrapping that up in, you know, the 2015 type of timeframe. We also anticipated with the new plan that there would possibly be a need for revised or new performance measures. So it was really with that, those sort of collective influences that we decided to pause the reporting on the performance measures. So where are we now? Well, we didn't finish revising the plan in 2015. So it's become a fairly protracted planning process that has ensued. And we've been hearing from board members and stakeholders a desire to have an understanding of what's happening on the forest. So we are reporting out on a subset of our measures today. Where are we going? As you know, we're deeply into several impactful planning processes that are going to guide management on state forests, a new forest management plan, an HCP, should you choose to adopt it, the climate change and carbon plan, to name a few. We're doing strategic planning around recreation, education, and interpretation. And so with that type of work, I think is the important opportunity for us to take a look at our performance measures and refresh them. to make sure that we are tracking items that are directly aligned with any new goals or revised goals that might be in those plans. So today is an informational agenda item, but certainly welcome feedback and hope to hear discussion within the board around establishing performance measures for our new policies and what that might look like. We'll be hosting the actual conversation for that in March. So it's kind of just dipping your toe in the water, if you will. In my mind, some considerations around performance measures include that, you know, linking those directly with forest management goals. How many performance measures do we want? I think that it needs to be a meaningful number, but if there are too many, it's hard to prioritize and make sure we have resources for that. That we pick performance measures that can be fairly durable. Otherwise, it's difficult to report on trends. You'll see in the staff report that the current performance measures were revised a couple of times. How detailed should performance measures be? And picking performance measures that lend themselves to setting targets. So just some things to think about. We obviously are not walking through all that today, but I think it's a good precursor for the conversation. So today we're reporting on 6 of those 9 currently established performance measures. Again, various data sources. And because of that, there's some pieces to walk away with. One is that some of this is just giving you a snapshot in time, but others provide some insights around trends. And the intent here is we can now establish a system that we can report on until the FMP-HCP are adopted. And hopefully that happens in short order. So with that, I'll hand it over to Tyson.
Thank you, Liz. Good morning, Chair Kelly, members of the board, and State Forester Hirsch. For the record, I am Tyson Weprick, the Adaptive Management Specialist in State Forests. And my role is to plan an adaptive management program to measure the implementation and effectiveness of forest management plans and to provide technical guidance and consultation on monitoring needs and methods within state forests. So on this slide, we have the 9 previous performance measures that were reported biennially to the board. And I'll share an update on where these stand today and our plans for the future improvements. Some of these are presented in more detail in the staff report. And I'm going to rearrange this order to group them by similar measures and show more detail on the components that went into these 2013 performance measures. And I'll indicate updates in blue font, like on this slide. I'll note that carbon storage is not an official performance measure. It's included today because of its importance to give the board a preliminary look at where we stand and what a potential performance measure could look like. So for forest performance measures, listed here are what went into each of those measures. And I won't be going into detail on forest health because we just saw a great presentation by the team in private forests. And our measures rely extensively on that work that they described. Trends and damage noted by aerial surveys and the area with Swiss needle cast or bark beetle damage were included in the previous state forest performance measure reports. However, with these examples, state forest mitigates the damage of pathogens of trees through management, but we do not necessarily react to annual fluctuations that are expected and out of our control in ecological systems. So although we would react to longer term trends that impact our ability to meet management objectives, we do not have clear thresholds on what we would change and when as private forest reports these long term trends. The second performance measure on this slide was labeled the quantity of habitat in the report. And we note that this is primarily measured with forest structure biometrics, not necessarily habitat of specific species. And today I'll give an update on stand structure type, but in the previous report, legacies were also measured. And that was based on a one-time monitoring study in the 2000s that found that in general, our legacies, our leave trees and snags and down wood were meeting forest management plan objectives. However, snags were the one most likely to be lagging, and that was attributed to ODF managed lands history as a second growth forest without some of those older dead trees. So for habitat stand structure type, a key goal in our forest management plan is to contribute to habitat for sustainable populations of native fish and wildlife. And the current forest management plan is based on a concept called structure-based management, which establishes a classification of forest stands into five structures based on meeting thresholds of tree size and stand diversity, snags, and down wood. And the classifications represent a series of successional stages that occur over time after a stand disturbance, either natural or harvest. And these classes are regeneration, closed single canopy, understory, layered, and older forest structure. And I provide just a small schematic of understory and layered on the slide. So the idea of stand structure based management is that these different types arranged on the landscape will provide a diversity of habitat for native species. However, we recognize this is a surrogate measurement. In general, what we have been interested in for species of concern is late seral habitat quality, in which layered and older forest structure stands, which collectively we call complex structure, provide the best surrogate measure for habitat quality for species like the spotted owl and marbled murrelet. The forest management plan gives a range of the percent area of each stand structure type to describe the long range desired future condition on the landscape across each management district. And the April 2010 board meeting, the board approved revisions to the stand structure targets. So the current target is 30 to 50% of complex forests, which again is layered or older forest structure. And in general, state forests have an overrepresentation of understory stands, again, shown on the left here. And a lot of the performance measure of complex stand percentage depends on the timing of the development of layered stands from understory stands. And the division has spent a lot of time developing measurement thresholds to measure when exactly stands mature from understory into complex habitat. It was initially expected that the stand structure types would be below the targets, but the targets would be reached over time. So here is a table of the percent of the complex forest structure. And this shows the latest years. I have all districts. This is just the three North Coast districts. And that's a key performance measure presented to the Oregon legislature each year. And one thing I'd like you to note is that the line between 2017 and 2018 represents a change in our modeling methods. And what the model does is it helps us to assign missing stands with missing data are assigned or imputed to similar stands. And when our model assumptions changed as we updated the model that year, the estimated percent of complex structure dropped abruptly across those districts. And since then, you can see that it has been increasing, albeit slowly. And much of the year-to-year variation is likely due to our stand level inventory methods. And we'll talk more about inventory investments later, but we will be modernizing our inventory to correct some of these uncertainties in our structure type assignments. And here we have that same table data presented graphically, if that helps the visual learners. I'll note with this one, it's extended back in time a little more. From 2010 to 2012, we only had estimates for the entire North Coast together, and new inventory wasn't collected at that time. So that explains the static bars in those early years. Next, I'd like to talk about our draft metric, carbon storage. The climate change and carbon plan that you will be voting on later gives details of a lot of the previous and ongoing carbon monitoring efforts statewide. So this is not rehashing those much. So those monitoring efforts, like the carbon inventory and the harvested wood products inventory, were performed at a state level. They were based on FIA monitoring plots, which do not give us the granularity we need for telling ODF how our carbon varies across districts. So what they end up doing is summarizing by ownership and lumping ODF managed lands together with other non-federal public lands. So today's work, we're trying to use published results of estimates of carbon storage based on remote sensing to see how carbon aligns with state forest boundaries to give more granular estimates for carbon storage on state forests. And so for this work, we used an independent data set from the LEMA group based at Oregon State University with employees of Oregon State and the Forest Service and the Pacific Northwest Research Station. And they have a long track record of carbon estimation and forest biometrics estimations. And this figure is a brief overview of their modeling method. They use FIA monitoring plots as their ground truthing, and they pair that with Landsat remote sensing data. And the satellite data helps indicate when exactly stands have a natural or a harvest disturbance, and they track that through time. They also pair that with ecological factors like climate, geology, topography, and they use all of those FIA plots to come up with a gradient space, or you know, which plots are similar to each other. And then on the landscape for every area without ground measurements, they predict based on the nearest neighbor in that space of FIA ground plots. So they make a prediction for every 30 by 30 meter pixel, and they've done this for carbon accounting across the Western United States. So we used that modeling product and paired it with some of our harvest data from each state forest district. And from the harvest data, we used the methods developed in a recently commissioned report, the Oregon Harvested Wood Products Carbon Inventory Report. And we were able to use their analysis to estimate the carbon stored in harvested wood products over time, accounting for the emissions and discardment of products in use. So I want to give a few caveats. Live trees and harvested wood products are just two aspects of forest carbon that we're presenting because we control these most directly through our management. They are not the whole picture. Live trees is about a third of the carbon present on a stand. Soil provides about half the carbon storage. And legacies like dead trees and down wood can make up about 7% of total carbon storage. So in live trees, limited to the Oregon Coast Range, over the last 30 years, I'm presenting the LEMA modeling results. First, comparing ownership on ODF managed land in the left graph, you can see our trend line. And in 2017, on average, our lands store 50% more carbon than private or industrial forests when you just count the live trees. And federal land stores 37% more per area than ODF managed lands. And you can also see that by state forest district, the trends in carbon and the levels of carbon currently vary. And carbon storage and the carbon storage potential can vary by district based on site productivity, tree species, stand age, and management history. And I want to emphasize that this is the average carbon stored per area when I've looked at forests that are older on ODF managed lands, mean carbon is significantly higher. So in forests over 100 years old, the carbon storage in live trees can be approximately 150 to 215 metric tons per hectare as a point of comparison. And this is also, again, I'm emphasizing this is carbon per unit area. When you look at the total carbon stocks by ownership in this region of Oregon, ODF has 9% of the land, ODF managed lands is 9% of the land base, and total carbon on ODF managed lands is about 10%. So we are proportional with our ownership. So to try to get a bigger picture, counties and stakeholders and other partners have emphasized the importance of including harvested wood products and the carbon stored within to get a better picture of our carbon impact. And so here I present the results of the LEMA live tree estimate combined with a harvested wood product model. And what this shows in the graphs is for each district, we have the live tree carbon in green, the stored carbon within harvested wood products in orange, and in blue or purple, the harvested wood product carbon that's slowly emitted over time as products decompose when they are no longer in use. And what you can see, I'm going to move to a different graph that shows a total so you can see the bars a little better in that one. But what you can see is that the live tree trend, which based on LEMA data peaked 10 years ago, continued on an upward trajectory when you include harvested wood product carbon as well. However, the total carbon between both has also plateaued in recent years. This ends at 2017. This analysis, I want to emphasize, is not a life cycle analysis that would include all aspects of carbon emissions throughout the harvest activities, but this is a potential metric that state forests could track over time to see how management is meeting carbon goals developed in future planning efforts. And this does not include carbon in soils or legacies, other emissions, or substitution for non-renewable products. So our stand-based management has been based on an inventory program that has been aging, and we have a strategic inventory investment to collect LIDAR and pair this with more ground data to get a better sense of our forest biometrics that can be used for operations planning, measurement of carbon storage, and measurement of habitat suitability in much more detail. So in 2020, we contracted LIDAR flights in the area shown on the map. And LIDAR can give us estimates of individual trees, kind of like the figure shown on the left. And what we're doing is pairing that with triple the number of FIA plots in a cooperative agreement with the Forest Service Pacific Northwest Research Station and Research Region 6. So tripling the number of FIA plots will allow us to measure more directly the forest biometrics. It'll improve the carbon products modeled by groups like LEMMA because they are also based on FIA plots. And it'll allow us to modernize our inventory. I think one example of our current planning and the impacts it could have on the performance measures we do in the future is the HCP wants to track habitat suitability of different species. And if we're measuring something like owl dispersal habitat, it's easier to do that and to see where the forest meets those conditions based on LIDAR, which has no stand boundaries compared to a stand-based inventory, where you assume that the entire stand is the average biometric level. Moving on to water performance measures. So in 2013, water quality was measured using two metrics, hydrologically connected roads and fish passage barriers. And when those were set in 2007, targets were set to be met in 10 years in 2017. And the targets were less than 15% of roads with hydrological connectivity and less than 2% of road crossings where streams have barriers to fish passages. And previous reports were based on road and watershed surveys conducted in the 2000s. And at that time, they documented that on average, 15% of roads were connected to streams, which was close to the target. And approximately 4.7% of stream crossings did not provide adequate fish passage, which did not meet the 2% goal. Since then, we do not have a reevaluation to compare with this target because we have not repeated watershed surveys. However, each district takes an approach to managing its road system, which may involve monitoring of hydrologic connectivity. What we do have is an example of the restoration activity we have performed over time. So these are restoration projects, which we send to the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. And from these annual data, you can see trends where State Forest had a larger program pre-recession. There was a lot of energy and effort after the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds came out. And there was a huge effort on ODF to improve stream habitat quality for salmonids. So the decline in restoration projects may not only be attributed to spending levels, but also the benefits of restoration projects, such as miles of access restored for fish, may accumulate more slowly now than they did at the beginning of the effort when we tackled projects that would have the biggest impact. So over the last 10 years of reporting, state forests have averaged about 24 restoration projects, 10 miles treated, and about 300 trees donated annually to improve habitat within streams. Going forward with water performance measures, I've talked a lot with our aquatics and riparian specialists about what we could be doing. And I think in general, there is a desire to move towards effectiveness monitoring rather than simply compliance or implementation monitoring. And effectiveness monitoring would measure whether these actions that I've presented are improving stream habitat in the manner we expect them to, and whether that is impacting the aquatic populations of interest. One example of monitoring that we've been doing is after the fires in Saniam State Forest, we developed a monitoring program to see how vegetation develops after the fire. This summer, we monitored 24 sites across Saniam State Forest and stream buffers with different burn severity. And we measured vegetation, a tree canopy of live and dead trees and down wood to track over time. And these sites will be receiving three different treatments, either no management, tree planting similar to upland management, or a planting of native woody shrubs and other plants, as well as integrated pest management to try to make sure that those plants establish vegetation cover as fast as possible. So as we compare these three treatments over time, we'll be able to see what sort of management we should be doing in response to fire to protect some of the services that our streams provide. And finally, with water, there are many policy impacts that could change the performance measures we're looking at. There's been a lot of news lately that I don't even know the details about, but with the Private Forest Accord, if there are changes in the Forest Practices Act, that will impact how state forests, it may impact how state forests manages and which performance measures we would want to report in response. For social performance measures, the previous reports looked at recreation and public support of management. I'll be updating recreation and adding education and interpretation as well. Recreation is primarily funded by timber revenue. About 98% of ODF state forests is funded by timber revenue, so recreation is no different. The investment in recreation varies by different, and although it's difficult to track trail users, I'm presenting camping visitors and camping revenue because that's where people stay still long enough that it's easier to count them. So for camping, recently we averaged 41,000 visitors for last five years. In the staff report, I give miles of new trail construction, which is something we report annually. But as a metric, trail mileage isn't perfect. It may not be expected to grow each year, and it may decrease if maintenance or decommissioning of trails may bring greater improvement, safety, or connectivity to a trail network. Camping revenue has been growing over time, which is a function of visitors and also some fee increases. But revenue shows a less noisy time series of growth compared to visitors, which varies more each year. At the Tillamook Forest Center, this is something that was not reported on in previous performance measures reports. You can see the number of Tillamook Forest Center participants in education, interpretation, and visitors to the Forest Center plotted on these three graphs. And in general, the audience was growing pre-pandemic, which I left off the last 2 years of numbers because of that. Education and interpretation are different disciplines. So education is curricula-based with intended outcomes, like what a school group would come to the Tillamook Forest Center to do. And interpretation is a communication process that forges emotional and intellectual connections between the audience and the meaning of the forest. And those programs come in a variety of types and reach a greater diversity of participation. And both of these programs were moved online in the last 2 years as the Tillamook Forest Center was closed. And for recreation and education and interpretation, much of the future performance measures will depend on the strategic planning that they're going through currently. It may involve something like visitor use data and surveys through academic partnerships to monitor visitor use levels and satisfaction. These are the economic performance measures that were included in the 2013 report. And the time I spend on these does not reflect the emphasis that State Forest places on the economic and social benefits. These performance measures are the easiest to track and the most frequently reported performance measures. So I'll go through these pretty quickly. Much of these are in annual reports. I'm not reporting on net return of asset value, which was in the 2013 report. So how well revenues support forest management as a measure of financial sustainability. And so here we show the costs and revenue associated with our management, as well as projected future revenues and costs. And overall, the share of revenues has exceeded its management costs. That is a positive net operating income. And that positive balance is maintained in the Forest Development Operating Fund. And revenues are projected to exceed costs for the next three fiscal years. The Forest Development Fund provides stability to the division during timber market fluctuations, and the division maintains a balance of 6 to 12 months of operating expenses in that fund. So here I'm showing two graphs with the volume of timber harvest on state forests each fiscal year, and comparing that to the inflation adjusted value of those harvests in 2020 dollars. So our planned volume sold very consistently meets targets set in the implementation plans, but the annual volume can fluctuate from the planned or sold volume. And part of that is because the contracts for timber sales are flexible so that operators can time those to when they find it best, often aligning with log prices. Log prices provide the main reason why the lines on these graphs are not always perfectly aligned. Variation in the market can have a big impact on the real value compared to the volume that's harvested. So I'll just note that post-recession, you can see how volume stayed at relatively the same level on state forests, but the real value dropped due to log prices. And in general, this reliance on timber revenue can make our operations and benefits to trust counties vulnerable to market conditions as the value varies. The direct financial contributions to counties are shown here. These direct transfers support schools, general funds, and taxing districts. And annual direct revenue transfers to counties ranged from nearly $59 million to nearly $87 million between 2016 and 2020. And the five-year average of more recent years is about 22% above the 10-year average, unadjusted for inflation. And for future directions with economic performance measures, I think you'll hear more about this in our FMP goals, where community well-being was a new goal added to it. During the October board retreat, you all also had discussion on how to include community well-being and other indirect measures for impacts of state forests on communities. And I think that was something we look forward to hearing more about. And our economic metrics, as I said before, they're probably the best reported, most reliably, but there may be impacts on policy measures on the levels of performance measures and what we choose to report in the future. So thank you very much. I'd love to hear any questions you have or feedback on performance measures that you think would be worth pursuing.
Okay, it looks like we've got a few questions from board members. I will start with Brenda.
Thank you, Jim. Brenda McComb for the record. I have two questions. One is your chart showing, and I'm not sure if you can share your screen again, but the chart showing the carbon in standing live trees over time on state lands. And if I'm interpreting it correctly, on average over all districts, the carbon in live trees on state lands declined in the last few years, and particularly in a couple of the districts. Next, go up one. One previous to this. Can you? Yes, there. Thank you. So the owner one, the chart on the left shows Board of Forestry Common School lands. That line is dipping at the end, whereas industry and federal are increasing or staying the same. And particularly on a few of the districts, that line is dropping. And if we're that, to me, that implies that we're cutting more than we're growing. And that raises a question in my mind. So that's one question. The other question is, since state forests are belong to all Oregonians, that it seems to me there should be some stratified social survey done by social scientists that allows the public to weigh in on their values and reactions to the way the state forests are managed. And I'm not seeing that. I guess what I'm seeing is more local impacts in terms of recreation and return to counties, but I'm not seeing the surveys for all Oregonians. So those are my two questions.
Thank you, Brenda. For the record, Liz Dent. I'll take a stab and then I'll hand it off to Tyson and or Todd on the carbon question. But in terms of first the statistically social surveys for the public to weigh in on benefits for state forests, I couldn't agree more. And you're right, that's not in the set of performance measures at this point, but it seems like a really good idea as we refresh performance measures to conduct that type of survey. And there's certainly plenty of experts that we could contract with to get that work done. On the first question, so does that answer that question, Brenda, or is there a follow-up there?
Thank you, Liz. Yes, thank you.
Okay. In terms of the trends in carbon storage and if it means we're cutting more than we're growing, first I'll give a general reflection and then I'll stop talking and hand it off to the experts. But to me, this is really valuable information to do to have the conversation we're having now. So we're seeing these trends as currently modeled. Based on our conversations, it's pretty clear that that's not the trend we want to be seeing. And so how do we turn that around and what's our target is to me the really important piece we're going to have to really solve, I guess I'd say, as we're putting together the policy work for the board.
Yeah, thanks, Liz. I think it raises questions about the upcoming forest management plan, right? And how we're going to approach that to make sure that this trend line goes in the direction that we would all expect.
Yeah, exactly. And if you want more around the question of what's causing the dip, I can have these other two folks answer that.
No, I think that's fine. I mean, what concerned me, of course, is that the harvest volumes, although they bounced around a lot due to markets, were not going down. They were going up while the metric tons of carbon per hectare were going down, which just raised a question in my mind.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, we'll go to Ben next.
Thank you for this. I love these kinds of numbers. This is really was a fascinating presentation. And I guess I wanted, Brenda again took one of the questions I had, just as a brief follow-up on the carbon trend line. It seems to me that the carbon sequestration should sort of follow the complex forest structure. I think complex older forests will have more carbon than the layered or younger forests would be my assumption. And if the one trend line is going up, would the other one, I guess, is there a correlation, I guess, was my question. And I know that's a big question and might not be an easy answer, but could one assume that there would be a correlation between those two?
I, for the record, Tyson Weprick. And yes, so the LEMA group puts out additional products other than carbon storage, including diameter diversity index and other biometrics that you can use to try to assess forest structure. They don't align perfectly with the thresholds that we have used in the past for those complex performance measure targets. But when looking at something like diameter diversity index from LEMA, which I don't show in the report, there is a correlation with above ground carbon in live trees and one measure of stand complexity, which isn't the total picture that we report with stand complexity. So there's not perfect alignment, but I think you're correct.
Great, thank you.
Okay, Carla, you've got a question?
Just a couple of comments. On that federal forest line, one thing that jumps out at me is over the last 40 years, when we've decreased that new equivalent growth harvest from 42 down to 8%, I would question why that curve isn't a lot steeper on the federal forest. I would expect that to be a lot higher. So maybe offline, Liz, you can explain that to me sometime, but I would expect that to be much greater. I would like to see the asset value on the state forest, total acres, and just the overall asset value. I think that's a good thing to provide to Oregonians annually. And what is the ROA on that, on those state lands? One thing that jumped out in the report in your table five, I believe, is five counties represent 87% of the county payments. And I would just be interested offline, what percentage or dependency of their county budgets are those numbers for those bigger counties? And then it was of interest to me that with 41,000 visitors and 249,000 per year, that works out to $6 per visitor. And have we changed those rates over time, or is that number right? Because it does seem rather low. Anyway, that can all be offline, but those are some of my questions.
Thanks, Carla. I just didn't catch, I was jotting notes down as quickly as I could, but what was your last question there around, I think it was around visitors?
Yeah, the last one you show 249,000 per year, you know, other income, average for 5 years with 41,000 visitors, which would average $6 per visitor. And I just want, is that right? And, you know, how long ago has it been since we evaluated those rates? Maybe that's right, but it just seemed seemed low.
Yeah, your instinct is correct there. And we did, I want to say 3 or 4 years ago, adjust those rates because they weren't keeping up with inflation, A, and B, not aligning with other resources provided to Oregonians.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I would want to just pile on that one thing. I think that Carla's question around for us to know, have a better idea of how significant, what percentage of these dollars that go to these counties, what that is relative to their overall budgets as counties, that would really help us as policymakers to get that information. And I'm clueless about it. Joe.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Liz, just a little bit, I just want to follow up on some of Brenda's questions. I was a little surprised by the carbon storage on state forest land. My understanding, we were building inventory on state forest. Maybe that's not a correct understanding. And can you speak to the inventory practices? I guess your confidence surrounding the inventory of standing trees, standing live, you know, trees. I would think there'd be a correlation there. And so I guess I'm just surprised by that. Can you speak to your LIDAR inventory? I guess what you're trying to move towards there. I guess speak to your confidence related to that. I guess I just a little bit more understanding, Liz, surrounding, because I'm surprised by that, because I was under the assumption we were building inventory on state forests. That's a question. I'm going to make a comment. I do really appreciate the model carbon pools considering harvested wood products and a greater understanding of that, because I think that paints a more broad picture for us all to understand the impact, about carbon fully. So I'll go back to my question related to inventory. And if you
okay. Can, yeah, great. I'm going to call Todd to come and answer those questions. Thank you, Joe.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Todd Heron. I'm, as Liz introduced me, I'm the acting resource support unit manager and also forest resource analyst. So in terms of, maybe I'll just give a little background. Our confidence in our inventory, we have struggled with that over the past few years. Coming out of the recession, we kind of curtailed some of our inventory efforts. And then in 2016, we did a kind of an internal review of our practices and made some changes there. And ultimately, that has all kind of culminated in this need to, as Tyson suggested, the FIA-based inventory and coupled with the LIDAR. So, SLI has not been reliable in terms of capturing trends over time. And so we have wrestled with that. And so this information coming out of LEMA, we're still working to understand the LEMA data. It's new to us. Carbon in particular is a kind of a new measurement for us. It hasn't been a focus of our planning and inventory efforts in terms of reporting. And so we're working to better understand that, certainly. And so we're hoping that this new information is kind of a benchmark for us to kind of build from to better understand how our management, both past and future, will affect carbon. But,
I'm sorry, just to follow up. Am I off? Am I incorrect that we believe that we are building inventory on state forests?
It certainly varies. Even those trends, it varies. Overall, our projections show that we build inventory over time, and I guess this raises questions about whether or not the degree to which that occurs, and we do need to better understand the relationship between inventory, as we have reported in the past, which is typically merchantable volume, board foot volume, and how that relates to biomass and carbon generally.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Joe, as I understand it, we've been. Since we've been board members, Bob Van Dyke's been coming and telling us that he thinks we're cutting too much on the state forests, and we've never really known that whether that was true or not. It's now looking like maybe Bob was correct. I do know that there's other people who are working on this and are going to be meeting with ODF. So I think we don't really quite know if this is totally reliable data, but I think the evidence is starting to point that this direction. The fact that our current management over the last 10 years has not left us in a place where we are being additive in our management relative to carbon. But okay, Chandra, you've got a question, looks like.
Yeah, thanks. Actually, I guess the first is just the comment on the aquatic performance measures and like the idea of effectiveness monitoring. And clearly that needs to be tied to pretty clear goals and objectives to be, I think, really meaningful. But I'm just wondering about the shift to more of a watershed health metrics and looking at the potential for different harvest patterns and practices to affect the availability and timing of flow and aquifer health. And so that does mean, looking a little bit more at either aquifer levels or flow measurements at different times to assess whether or not you're seeing changes. And I'm wondering if that's been discussed ever or has been a consideration. or could be a potential that we could talk about in the future. I guess that's an area of interest and you don't have to answer now, but I'll say, I think that would be an important thing to look at and may address some of the folks' concerns we're hearing now around water quantity. And then the other question I have, and I think it gets to the inventory questions as well, but you know, clearly we're lagging in our complex forest inventory goal by quite a bit. And I was just wondering, the initial assumptions that were made when that goal was articulated, what was the timeframe that we thought was realistic to get to that goal?
Thank you. This is Liz Dent for the record. Those are great couple of questions there. And so in terms of flow, our aquatic riparian specialist has been thinking about that. And where she's arriving is that our best approach to that is really going to be to use, select a good model for that. It's doesn't lend itself well to monitoring and really is a something that needs more of a research approach just because of the variability over time and space. And it just has to be very carefully, designed, and it's an intensive type of metric. And then the linkages can be complicated when we're measuring that a stream that may have covered multiple ownerships. It just gets very complex, but we are definitely thinking about that. In terms of the target and how long it would take to get to complex structure, that was not lined out in the current forest management plan. It is something that shows up in implementation plans, but that varies by district. And I would say what we've been thinking since the plan was adopted is somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 to 75 years. It really depends on where we are. And one of the important realizations that we can draw from the data, some of which we are sharing with you today, is the variability. It's immense across our districts. So the time it would take in an area like Clatsop County, dramatically different than what it's going to take in Tillamook County. So how fast are the forests growing? Do they respond to the silvicultural practice to create structure? Those were some of the challenges that we saw by 2010 or so, is that variability needed to be accounted for.
And that was not a conversation topic when the goal was first articulated, was the variability you might see in the different geographies?
When the performance measure was put together, not so much when the targets were set in the forest management plan. Range in those targets was intended to allow for that variability over time and space. The performance measures themselves really did roll up those targets at too high of a level and did not account for that variability across districts. So I could see if the board wanted to stay with some sort of stand characteristic metric, that we ought to think about how that varies across the landscape and have reasonable performance measures and targets.
Okay. Ben, you have a question or comment?
Thank you. This monitoring and reporting, I feel like is very important, and there's been a real lag. We've had a number of years without very much of this, and we're sort of playing catch up here. And Tyson, I really appreciate the work you've put into sort of putting this back together and synthesizing this and coming up with new ways of measuring things. I have a question going forward is, what is the department's ability to continue this work? And I know that funding streams are volatile, and yet monitoring and the subsequent reporting should not be volatile. It should be very consistent and happen on a regular basis. And is there a structure currently within the division for that to continue, or is that worth further conversation among the board to find ways to make that happen?
Yeah, thank you. Liz Dent, again, for the record. the framework for monitoring and adaptive management, which one feeds into the other, but you know, they are different processes. That is being teed up in our work for the Habitat Conservation Plan. So those would work in tandem with the Forest Management Plan by and large. When we begin pulling those two plans together, that's a time again to look and determine if we need something in addition that only applies to the Forest Management Plan, for example, that may not apply to the HCP or vice versa. But that's where that's being built. Your question around certainty and commitment to research and monitoring is really spot on. And again, the HCP has a funding structure for research and monitoring. And so to the best of our abilities, that's baked into the costs of implementing the HCP and a long-term commitment to do so. And what I would say is for us to be able to achieve that, we really, really need to prioritize what we're monitoring. We need strong partnerships. We have a good track record of that. Different partners provide different strengths to the questions that we may be pursuing. So I think as long as we are mindful of those pieces, I'm optimistic.
Great, thank you.
Arla, another comment or question?
Yeah, I think this is an area that maybe Cal can really help us in, because I feel like this is such important policy work and we're making important decisions with regard to state lands. And I want to first be sure we have confidence in the numbers as it would relate to this carbon graph that we just saw, because I don't know if we're really tracking this well enough. So for example, in that number, does it really take into account, does the state lands carbon trend take into account the RMAs and other set asides as they exist? Is it taking into account the contribution of younger stands? And do we really have accurate numbers in front of us? And I guess if we do, I don't have confidence this minute that we do to say, wow, we're cutting too much, we're cutting too little, because I just don't know. So maybe this is a good place where we could rely on Cal to round up the information and get it into a format that we would have good confidence before we would be in a place of making such a big decision.
Okay. Yeah. Well, obviously there's a lot of interest, I think, from all of us to continue to learn about this data and get to a place where we're all feeling secure about it. We are over time here, but Brenda, you have one more comment or question?
Very quick comment, just to agree with Carla. I think the bottom line here is this, that although the LEMA data indicate that there's probably a decline in carbon and consequently a decline in live tree inventory, that raises a lot of questions and we need answers.
Okay, it looks like we're moving towards our lunch break, and I think I'll take my chair's prerogative to have the last word. Two thoughts. One, we can feel good about the fact that our state forests do hold a lot more carbon than adjoining industrial managed lands. And so that's a good thing. But we do need to be realistic about what's happening in the market, because these groups of builders and architects are looking now at it, as they look at these issues of whether concrete or steel or wood is which one is the better from a climate smart point of view, they're starting to look at making the point that not all wood is created equal. And in that case, they're going to be really looking at forests that are managed so that the carbon storage there is additive. And so we do, if what this data indicates to be true, we've got something to turn around, or our state forest wood will get blacklisted in some markets. And that's a real potential threat that would hurt the department and would hurt the counties who share the revenue potentially. down the road. So with that, I think we are, we have gone from a 45 minute lunch to, or excuse me, we're 10 minutes late. So we were scheduled for a 45 minute lunch. I think it's going to be a 35 minute lunch, if I'm right. Yeah, so we should be returning at 1:15. And with that, we'll all take a break, a well-earned one, I would say.